Welcome to the About Sex podcast. I'm your host, Angela Skirtu. I'm a licensed marriage therapist in the state of Missouri and an ASEX certified sex therapist. You can find me at www.therapistinst.louis.com. Now today I'm interviewing Chris, is it Scarberry?
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I did it correctly.
That is correct.
LPC business, sometimes known as Scarberry therapy. Oh, that actually has a nice ring to it.
Thank you.
All right. So Chris is a therapist in private practice who specializes in working with HIV-affected clients and the LGBTQ population, who also is skilled at cooking, playing the musical Saw, interesting, has four cats, and is in a long-term relationship with another therapist. All right. Well, thank you for coming.
That's my bio I came up with.
I know. I was like, I tell them to come up with like a little bio, and I liked yours. It was really cute.
I tried to mix personal and professional.
All right. All right. Well, so anyhow, I guess I am wondering like what, I know that you work with the HIV population. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the work that you do?
Okay. Well, I tend to get a broad range of HIV-affected individuals. Most of the folks I see are either newly diagnosed with HIV or have been living with it for probably about 20 years. For some reason, a lot of the referrals I get are like 50-year-old gay men who are HIV positive too. So That's a lot of who I see.
What kind of work do you do?
Well, I do individual and couples work mainly. Occasionally, I do full-on family work, but most of the time, it's either couples around issues of HIV infection or other presenting issues, and then just general individual counseling, both with a variety of presenting problems and also around HIV.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so what are some of the challenges that people who are going, who recently contracted HIV, do you get people right when they've been diagnosed? Do you get them mm-hmm. later in life?
I do sometimes. I get a little bit of both. So, yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges that I find right now is there's still a lot of bad information out there and a lot of stigma. Mm-hmm. And especially like in, you know, this kind of part of the country too, where it's like there isn't always necessarily the best sex ed for people. And I think a lot of people still don't understand how HIV is transmitted and things like that. And they also don't understand that, you know, with current medications, people can live a normal lifespan taking one pill a day. So, you know, it's not like HIV meds used to be. It's not a death sentence by any means, as long as you're, you know, compliant with your treatment. So a lot of what I do is sort of educating people about that too, because they sometimes come in the door not knowing that.
Okay.
So they think they're going to die. They think their family thinks they can't eat off the same dishes, you know, stuff like that. And mm-hmm. you're kind of trying to help people, you know, learn the right, you know, the right information.
Well, tell us some of that information, because even some people listening may not know that. So how is HIV transmitted?
Okay. It's transmitted by blood, by seminal and vaginal fluid and breast milk.
Okay.
So those are pretty much the only ways that it can be transmitted.
You know, I actually just learned, I didn't know that it was transferred through breast milk, actually. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is HIV positive and wants to breastfeed, they shouldn't?
Don't quote me on this particular piece, because I don't see a whole lot of HIV positive women at the moment. But I believe if a woman is on antiretrovirals, who's positive, is on antiretrovirals and gets to a point where they're undetectable, the risk is very low to nil, kind of thing.
Okay.
But you
okay.
kind of have to be in treatment to be able to get to that point.
What's involved in the treatment?
As I mentioned, most of the regimens right now are one pill a day. So mm-hmm. like the way HIV meds started out was, you know, you had to take 20-30 pills a day and time them appropriately and all these sorts of things. And they've whittled it down to where all the facets are in one pill. And then what you do is, you know, you have to take that. All the pills, the medications for HIV are insanely expensive. So, you know, but most of the time insurance covers it if you have good coverage, or the state covers it if you don't, or your finances aren't such that you can afford it. So, yeah, that's pretty much, you know, you take the one pill a day. It has minimal side effects. The biggest issue with a lot of the new meds is just like bone density issues. So there's like risk of osteoporosis as people get older. But it's not like, you know, the like facial wasting and neuropathy and, you know, all the other sorts of serious side effects they used to. Mm-hmm. That a lot of folks who've lived with it for a long time and had the meds for a long time.
Yeah.
They live with stuff like that. But now there aren't those risks for the meds. So.
Well, so then most of it is treatable or preventable in some way. like, for example, when people are taking the medicine, then they can prevent their partner from getting HIV?
Correct. Correct. Okay. And now, and there's also PrEP and PEP, which stand for pre and post exposure prophylaxis, that people who are involved in what people might call more high risk sexual behavior, like having multiple partners or having unprotected sex or things like that, they can take the same medication as though they were HIV positive, and it will prevent them from becoming positive at like a 90. All the stats I've seen are somewhere between 90% and 95% rate.
So. Okay. Well, so then when people come in to see you, what are some of the things they're working through as a result of being HIV positive?
If they're older, a lot of times they're dealing with like survivor's guilt from losing a lot of friends to AIDS complications like in the 80s and 90s before meds were as good. A lot of my older folks have lipodystrophy, which is, I mentioned facial wasting, you know, they'll have like, you know, where, you know, people's abdomens become more pronounced and their legs look more slight and their face will waste some. Mm-hmm. That's one of the main, you know, side effects of some of the older regimens of medication. So a lot of them deal with that kind of thing, like, you know, body image issues around that and rejection that they may have experienced around that because people can tell that they're HIV positive by looking at them and stuff like that. And younger folks, I think a lot of times it's more, like I said, they still run into the stigma. And sometimes people have gotten, they maybe get too lackadaisical where they treat PrEP and PEP like that's 100%, like you're negative if you take the medications.
Yeah. Which isn't true.
Right, which is not true, and I'm not at all saying that. Clarify that. But one of my clients told me that he'd seen someone with Truvada is one of the medications, and he'd seen someone with a shirt that said Truvada, like Truvada slut or something like that. And it was sort of like that whole idea that, you know, well, I can go ahead and have sex whenever with whoever I want with no other kind of protection because now HIV is cured kind of thing.
Oh, I see. I've never seen anything like that, the Truvada slut.
Well, I have not either.
They're quite extreme, but okay.
That was secondhand.
They're just saying, you know, condoms are a good idea too. Just add a few extra barriers.
There are other STDs. I think it's sort of similar to how some folks think if a woman's on heterosexual sex, if a woman's having on birth control, they forget that all that's preventing is pregnancy and it's not preventing anything else. So.
What? It doesn't predict? Wait, I need to learn things.
Right. But I think people forget that too about you know, HIV meds. So
I think it's because nobody wants to wear condoms.
I think that's part of it. I think we may have talked about this in the past. Yes, I agree. That's a big problem.
They just need to make condoms more fun.
That's true.
Yeah. So how have you been personally be impacted by working with the queer community?
Well,
that's his question, by the way.
There you go. I think it's a great question.
It is a great question.
If I do say so myself. I definitely found, you know, my career started, I did an internship in my master's program at AIDS Project Los Angeles because I went to Pepperdine out there. And when I went into it, I was more focused on the chronic illness aspect. And of course, I ended up with a caseload of primarily gay men who are HIV positive. And, you know, that just sort of grew sort of a interest area, and I feel like, you know, definitely became, you know, someone that I would consider an ally of the LGBT community in the process. And you know, I started doing different things, and I find that it helps me empathize with my clients, but I also feel like it sort of helps me build rapport with them too. You know, I keep tabs on like what's going on at a lot of the gay bars in town. I go to, you know, different drag events and things like that. And, you know, I met some of the Mr. Leather Missouris. I have some good pictures of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoy doing different things. Like, it's definitely broadened my horizons since I'm a, you know, cisgender heterosexual person. Like, it's broadened my horizons a lot compared to other people I know who have the background that I do.
Do you let people know you're a heterosexual cisgender male? I love
not,
that phrase, by the way, because it's just so long.
It
but
is,
I get it.
Right. Yeah. Well, it depends on who you're talking to.
Okay.
I mean, I think either like my clients, they'll actually ask things like that and use terminology like that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a difference between how you talk about these kinds of things with the LGBTQ community and how you talk about it with your average person who might be, you know, they're living as their assigned gender that they were born with at birth, mm-hmm. and heterosexual, because they're a lot. I think a lot of people, some people are touchy about that, like they think it's too much terminology or they think they can't get a handle on it too. And you run into that. So.
You can learn. Everybody can learn. But at the same time, it is also a lot of word trippage. You know, it's like, da 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 da. I understand. I totally do it depending. It depends on where I'm at and like what the population is, because not everybody's going to hear that and really know exactly what you're talking about. But if you're trying to educate that population on that, then sometimes it's worth it to do it anyways. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how do you decide? Do most of your clients then ask you about that, like whether you're straight or gay?
Most of the time, they usually just ask me if I'm like open and affirming, or if I'm like queer informed, or something along those lines. Or they've already found that out from whatever referral source that they found me from.
They're like, "He's cool. We're gonna come to him."
Right, right. Yeah, because I mean, I do unfortunately hear a lot of horror stories, especially with LPCs. You know, I don't know, not to rag on my own profession and my own, you know, credential, but there's a lot of kind of faith based stuff that goes on with LPCs, and you know, so I hear some horror stories where people end up kind of in like conversion therapy light kind of thing, where they thought they were going to get an affirming therapist, and what they get is someone trying to talk them out of being gay or being trans or you know, something like that.
So. I do have a weird Uber story, or one of those Eats stories that reminds me of, because I was really just ordering Thai food, whatever those Eats are thing.
Right.
And then like the guy comes and he says, "Have you heard the good news?" And I was like, "About Thai food?" And of course he was, you know, like trying to convert me to religion, of course.
Right, right.
But I just thought I was like, well, one, smart thinking old couple, but two, how dare you?
Sure. I can probably sum this up, even though it's a long story, I can probably get it into about 30 seconds. I was with my significant other and my common-law mother-in-law, as I call her, and some of her brothers and sisters, and we went on this boat trip in the Everglades, and this guy, and it was with the Seminole tribe, I think, and they took us out to this island that had a village, Seminole Village, and, you know, we saw the alligators and all that stuff. He trapped us on this island, sat us all down on this bench, and started testifying to us about Jesus.
Oh, my God.
And then he was our way off the island.
Talk about a captive audience.
He was our way off the island. I was trying not to be rude, and I did a pretty good job. I just zoned out on my phone, but because I'm the person that was most bothered by that, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, anything that's non-consensual like that feels like an invasion of your privacy.
I agree.
Even if it's your religious value system.
Right, I'm all about consent.
Well, and I think, you know, going back to what we were talking about with the LPCs, I'm an LMFT. Just for people who don't know what those are, LPC, licensed professional counselors, LMFTs, licensed marriage and family therapists, and then there's others, LCSWs, who are clinical social workers. But we're supposed to focus on your values.
Right.
And your beliefs, and really leave our stuff out.
True. That is what we're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. He's like, that's what we're supposed to do. But it doesn't always happen, because people have their beliefs, and sometimes those beliefs come with a lot of anxiety, and I have to help people in this other way that sometimes isn't relevant. So when we go to people who are, I guess, queer affirmative or LGBT affirmative, you're looking for people who really are just going to respect you, your values, your lifestyle, and aren't trying to change that part of you.
Okay. Right.
Agree to disagree? No, I'm just kidding.
I agree.
He's making sure this is true. Well, so what are some of the difficult parts of your work?
Let's see. Since you brought up disclosure, I mean, I do think that that's sort of something that I weigh, especially since I'm in a significant relationship with a woman and stuff like that. And, you know, if people pry, like, well, who are you with? Like, if I happen to mention that I'm in a committed relationship or something just offhandedly, you know, people want to know, you know, more about that or that kind of thing. So I've kind of tried to figure out how to best package that. I mean, I think just like any disclosure that people seek from therapists, I think a lot of times, sometimes it's a manipulation. Sometimes they're just curious. Sometimes, you know,
sometimes they just want to feel connected to you in some way.
True. They don't. Right. So what I normally do, if it feels like if it feels like insecurity, I usually put it back on them to start with. And I may tell them down the line, but at the same time, I'll do the sort of therapist thing. And some people actually say you're acting like a therapist, but you know, I'll be like, well, what does that mean to you? And why is it that you want to know this? And, you
that's
know,
such
and that
a therapist thing to throw it back
it,
on
it
them.
Definitely is.
It's like, why do you want to know this? Like, you're evading the question, sir.
Right. I have been told that before when the tables have been turned.
Which, by the way, you are dating another therapist.
Yes. I am. Yes.
What's that like?
Well, that is like we are in a long-term committed relationship. We've been together for, gosh, 18 years now. Our anniversary would be 18 this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we it's one of those things. I mean, we know all each other's business and stuff like that. Sometimes our arguments, when we do disagree, sometimes it's around that sort of stuff. But by and large, I think it's a positive thing to have someone that can relate to this work and understand what it is that you do, and not need to pry too much, not need to pry inappropriately into what you're doing, but at the same time, understand what you do. And
you could probably talk at a global level a lot, but then at the same time, I wonder if your clients, since they do that, like, what's your life like? Do your clients know that you date a therapist? Are you in a long-term partnership?
they don't necessarily know that. I mean, one or two may.
Oh no, we're outing you right now.
If any of them hear it, I guess you know now. So, you know, yeah.
Well, I wonder. So, going back to the original question, so what are some of the other challenging aspects of doing your work?
I've run into issues with the LGBT population in town is very small, and I've run into issues with folks knowing each other. You know, as therapists, of course, we're supposed to keep people's confidentiality and at all costs, and you know, you get things like, I had sex with three of your clients I know from having seen them in your waiting room, and then they want to gossip about like how they are in bed, or they want to talk to you about all these other things, and you just have to sit there stone-faced and, you know, say, well, I can't discuss my clients, or change the subject, or say, oh, well, how is that uncomfortable for you? Or, you know, or something along those lines, and then say, well, I can make accommodations.
Oh, wow. That has got to be tough. You know, you come in and you see one of your former lovers.
Right. That is. Or former domestic abusers, too. I've had a variety of different things, different concerns that I've had to. That's actually why I don't unfortunately have it now, but my second office, I've had three offices. The second one, I did the thing where I got the separate exit so that people could leave and not have to walk through the waiting room to leave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wish that my current building had that, but it's not feasible. So.
Some part of me made me think of like a therapy walk of shame, but I don't like that phrase.
Sure.
I actually saw something on Facebook recently that I really appreciated. They said, instead of calling it a walk of shame, it should be like your parade of pride because you just got laid. So I'm like, you know what? Down right. for that. So, sure, cause and I want better. Therapy to be a parade as well because that's we're getting true. Help, you know?
That's true. And it does feel that way. If you're able to walk, and if you're able to walk in front of the people in the waiting room, there is that. There is that as well, too. It's just, yeah, like I say, on occasion I've run into that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I've run into, you know, oh, that person's hot, too, or, you know, stuff like that where they want to talk about that with me or, you know.
Are they trying to hit on each other in the waiting room?
Yeah, it appears so at times. So.
Well, I guess you could pull up Tinder and see if the person next right. to you is that, on there.
That's true.
Just
that's
a quick, true. Hey, just in case after therapy you want to.
Right. Well, even more so than, I mean, granted, everything in the world is online now. But,
sure.
But, you know, but I think even more so than with straight folks, I mean, gay hookup stuff is all on apps. So, you know, everybody's on apps. So, or at least a lot of people are.
Well, so if you do want to date in... No, I'm just kidding. Being so terrible.
That's fine.
So, you know, I know that a lot of people, you know, we were talking about some of the challenges with therapy. And I just wonder, you know, like for all therapists, like what ways does it sometimes impact you personally to be dealing, you know, like with the HIV population? Because it can be difficult in every population to be working with different kinds of trauma and problems. So I'm curious how it's impacting you.
Well, one thing I definitely feel like it's made me a lot more, sort of like I alluded to before, you know, it's made me a lot more vocal advocate for the people that I'm seeing. I feel a lot more connected to causes. I go, especially trans-related stuff, I definitely go out for a lot of, even if I have to talk to some of my clients in advance and say, hey, give them the, you know, I won't acknowledge you unless you acknowledge me kind of thing, because mm-hmm. the trans community is so small in town. But, you know, but I really feel like with the amount of, you know, trans women especially being murdered all the time and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's trans issues are life and death things. And, you know, I've become a lot more sensitive to that. So I do a lot of advocacy around that. Mm-hmm. Hearing about chronic illness can be traumatic for the person listening to it as well. So, yeah, I mean, I have to, like we always say, you know, you have to utilize self-care and sort of, mm-hmm. you know, just have a little bit of professional distance so you don't get too bogged down in it. But, you know, I feel that people, since they can live so well with HIV now, ultimately where they'll get to in the process is rewarding and makes me feel good about the work that I do, and also helps with any extent to which I get sucked into the negativity aspect.
I got you. Your personal negativity,
right,
I mean.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it can be. It can be difficult for therapists because our job is to deal with problems all day, every day. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you mentioned that. So for those of you who are therapists listening, I mean, that's a lot of what we do. You know, we do a lot of self-care to kind of, it's interesting. I've been getting a lot of self-disclosure questions from clients about that. Like whenever, what does the therapist do when they're going through their issues? And I'm like, sure. It's a lot of self-care, like severe self-care.
Sure, that's right, that's right.
But it works, you know? Like going to Burning Man or going to travel somewhere.
Uh-huh, sure. Or your own therapy or, you know, things like that.
What do you do for self-care? That was actually on your list. And I was like, oh, wow, I need to read another one of these. But it was already in line with where we were going. See, I was telling him, like, sometimes you just are already structured like that.
There you go. Well, you did read some of the things that I do for self-care in my bio. I enjoy my pets a lot. You know, I was one of these people that didn't like cats, and Megan was like a huge cat person, my significant other. And then, of course, you know, I've seen memes about that, and it's like, and then we ended up with four cats. Kind of
Have you learned to like cats more?
I have.
Okay,
and
I hope
as
so.
she'll point out, I'm one of these people that, you know, I've been the driving force between us to adopt a lot of the ones that we have. So,
oh, really?
So it's kind of, she goes and saves them from different places in various capacities, and then I take them in. So, and say, hey, let's not send them back. So we got the cats. As you mentioned, you know, I went to Burning Man last year. I'm going to go again this year. So that's kind of a fun way to be self-expressive and learn a lot of different freaky, weird, interesting things. And, you know, get out and, yeah, get outside your shell a bit. And so, yeah, we're going again this year. So that should be a blast. That's coming up in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. I play the musical Saw. I've been doing that for about 2 years. And I should practice more, but I've at least gotten to the point where I can, like, play anything I want to play by ear. I'm getting there. I mean, I'm pretty decent at it, I'd say.
I don't think I've ever known somebody who plays the musical Saw, so that is unique.
It's just in, like, kind of a, you know, weird carny sort of thing, which is kind of my wheelhouse, so, you know.
I'm a big fan of carny things, actually. I recently did Silks class. There's a bumper shoot right by here, and I did Silks, and I was like, this is so worth doing. I feel like a circus superstar.
I've heard that from other people that have done that.
Yeah.
I never have. I'm not at all fit or coordinated.
You know, you get fit over time. That's how it works. So how are the cats self-care? Is it that they snuggle all over you, or?
Yeah, it's sort of the way that they show you love and affection, and just sort of, you know, I think it's just like, I mean, you know, if you're an animal lover especially, I mean, it's sort of like they are your children of sorts, and it's sort of like, you know, it gets you outside of yourself, it gets you things to care about, you got to take them to appointments, you got to do stuff, you got to, mm-hmm. you know, make your house acceptable to them, yeah, mm-hmm. so it kind of gets you out of your head.
I do hear that cats train humans, like essentially they use us.
That is very true.
How have your cats trained you, Chris?
Well, I think that I'm the sucker of the two of us, we always say, and they know that. So I'm like the go-to for everything that everything that they would like or want, they usually will come and like stand on me and cry in my face, or you know, different things like that, or stand by the bed and keep yelling.
Essentially,
at
like
me.
Kitty cat tantrums,
right? Or yeah, truncated tantrums. They're all channeled into about 5 seconds, but yeah, they do that for sure.
I used to own a cat, and I actually at one point was able to call it by name, and it would come to me, and I was like, "This is exciting! I think I've trained a cat."
Sure, we have one that we say is probably our most intelligent one, and he recognizes his name, and he'll come when you call, and he'll play fetch with you too.
Oh, really?
Whereas the other cats, if you try to play fetch, they don't know where it went.
Mm-hmm. Disappeared.
right. Because I always debate that. You know, people say some people say, "Oh, dogs are smarter because they can be trained," and some people say, "Well, cats are smarter because they don't want to be trained." But
because they're ornery.
Right, there is that factor.
Well, yeah. They do say cats are like autistic too. I've heard that said as well. I don't know.
That's interesting. I don't know if I've heard that before.
I don't know. I saw it in some article. I was like, well, I don't know if we can diagnose them really.
Sure. But well, and I think some have more of a capacity to connect than others. But I mean, I really do feel like, I mean, that's sort of something I feel about cats as animals, is that they're a lot more affectionate and connected to their owners than people stereotype them as. Mm-hmm. I feel like they kind of get a bad rap that way.
No, I love cats. They're wonderful. Well, so I'm curious, you know, we talked very briefly about your relationship with Megan. You've trickled it in, but what do you really think are the pros and cons of being with a therapist?
Okay. Well, I think, like all people, I can be a little, you know, blind to my own stuff, as they say, sometimes my own issues, my own, you know, when I'm maybe overlooking something. Mm-hmm. I feel like she's a lot better at telling me, always willing to tell me that.
Therapists are always willing to call you out on your bullshit in loving, supportive ways, or not in a relationship.
right. So yeah, so that definitely is, that's a thing in our relationship for sure. I feel like it's definitely, I'm trying to think with more pros. I mean, I already said more of the pros probably. Some of the cons, I mean, I feel like, you know, sometimes it can feel like all sometimes things, it can be too serious for too long. Like I said, with that, if you're just early, especially earlier in our relationship, I feel like we really, you know, learned all of everything, all of each other's stuff and baggage and things like that. Whereas, you know, we're always, well, it could be a pro too, but you know, I'm always surprised how little a lot of people talk in their relationships
or know about each other.
Right. Whereas we know everything about each other. So, you know, it's definitely that's a positive difference, I think, as long as it doesn't spill over to you feel like the person's in your head all the time.
Your little Megan
therapist.
You
kind of have to guard against a little bit.
Well, I can imagine that too, right? So like you said in the beginning, is pro and a con to it. So you got to know everything as much as you could. You went really deep really quickly, which actually in some relationships they say that many couples aren't going to that deeper level and they don't feel like they know each other in a really intimate way as a result of not having some of those deeper conversations. But then I guess the con at the same time is, well, sometimes we just keep getting deep and can we just like talk about the cats for just like a second?
sure. Well, I feel like it shoots us for, you know, it makes us sort of seek out deeper connection with other people too. And some people aren't down for that. You know, I mean, some people just want to casually socialize and they don't necessarily want to have a conversation about anything meaningful. And we don't have maybe as much patience for that as we should. Just, I think in part because of how we are used to relating to one another. So, you know, we kind of like want to be around people that are, you know, a little more authentic and can go a little deeper and
not going to talk about the weather.
Right. Yeah.
Like you need to talk about politics. Sorry, it's not going to work. I will say I went to a really cool like event recently where I got to talk about like political issues with people across the spectrum and they were respectful of each other.
Wow.
I know. I was like, how is this happening? I've never done it in my adult life.
No. I feel like we're all kind of either siloed out into our separate belief systems or we're hating on one another or whatever.
Which isn't good for growth. You know, even in our bubbles, we have to expand. We have to think outside of that box because even even like we're both, you're an LPC, but you still do like couples work and individuals work, right? Right, and so to work well with couples, you have to look at both sides, even with a relationship. So my guess is the same is true with politics.
I agree. Yeah.
My guess. Right.
So yeah, that's good to know that that's out there.
No, oh, yeah, I was especially kind of excited. I know. It's like, what? This happened? We need more of this. Well, so what directions are you hoping to take with your business?
Well, I'm rolling out a group in a couple weeks. I'm going to wait till I'm back from Burning Man. I've done group work in the past, but I haven't done any lately. Okay. So I'm that's something I was going to say. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to use my existing clients first to do an HIV positive men's group.
Okay.
I'm going to try to skew it towards the older, like 30 and older, just so they have kind of similar presenting kind of takes on the disease and diagnosis and everything. And I'm going to try doing that for, you know, 3 to 6 sessions and then see if they want to continue, but ultimately maybe try to do 10 to 12 if they're down and on board. And then I was hoping to maybe expand to possibly do, as clientele might be available, maybe do an HIV positive women's group or a HIV positive trans group. So, since a lot of people may or may not know, the largest growing group of HIV positive people is African-American women, heterosexual African-American women.
Really?
And so that might be an area. I might try to co-facilitate it maybe with a woman of color if I knew someone, but I felt like that could be an interesting group too.
Just a weird side question, but why do you think, and I know we can, okay, so we can never say causation, correlation, but why do you think that's the largest growing group, African-American females, heterosexual?
It's, well, there's sort of a combination. My understanding is that it's sort of a combination of factors. Access to care, access to treatment, not that this is true all across the board, but wealth and income disparity, cultural attitudes about medical and mental health care. Mm-hmm.
Or about condom usage, perhaps, too.
Possibly. And, there's also the, I don't know if you've heard of the down low phenomenon.
I have, but why don't you tell our listeners about the down low phenomenon?
Okay, well, basically what the down low phenomenon is they're Some men, predominantly African American men, since that term kind of exists in that milieu, who are overtly heterosexual, but then have sex with men, and are completely closeted, and nobody knows. And so one can infer from that sort of thing that no one's getting any HIV testing. Nobody's communicating about any sex partners they're having.
They certainly aren't telling their female partners
or female partner, right? So that's a big cultural factor that exists too.
Well, and to add to that, I know that in African American culture, there's a lot of stigma around being gay, and so that seems to be at least culturally a way that they're getting around that, like being able to, you know, act out essentially on, you know, being gay, but like in a way that doesn't harm them publicly, because there's harm that actually comes to people that are sometimes openly gay and African American.
That's true. A lot of times they can be ostracized and kicked out of their homes. I've run into that numerous times in my work, and
or interesting. Worse. Or so, worse. Yeah. Well, I mean, or worse. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, huh. Well, so I guess what are some final thoughts, because we're towards the end of the episode, what are final thoughts or things you want our listeners to take home about either what you do or, what's important? Save the world in your last question here.
Wow, that's an intense question. All right, let's see.
It's okay. We know you can do it.
All right. Okay. I'll try to tackle this in pieces here. Well, as I said, to give some of the bullet points, HIV as an illness is a very, a very livable condition at this stage of the game, both in terms of remaining HIV negative, and in terms of getting treatment if you do become HIV positive. There's, if you don't have the income to be able to, and you don't have good private insurance, you can utilize the Ryan White funds through, you can like contact St. Louis Effort for AIDS or other agencies like that, or the health department, and you can get services that are free of charge, and good services that are free of charge. And the HIV physicians in town are fantastic. So there's good, St. Louis may struggle in some ways, but there are definitely good HIV services here. So there's that factor. It's an honor to be a part of that community and to do the work that I do. I really enjoy it, and I take it very seriously, and I feel like I enjoy connecting with my clients and that sort of thing. So, you know, if anybody's listening to this and you ever want to, you know, provide a referral to someone that you know, I definitely do my utmost to, you know, put the aspects of myself that I'm able to put into the work that I do. And I'm passionate about the things that I have chosen to, you know, focus on in my life. And I'm a balanced, strange in a good way sort of person. So I feel like I, you know, and I bring that into my work too. So, you know, I'm an individual, I'm a human being. So that's sort of what I value and what I think is important in what I do.
How do people find you?
They find me through, I've had the same telephone number for 14 years. It's 314-750-5216. Or my website is Scarberry, like my last name, therapy.com. And my email is scarberrytherapy@yahoo.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And of course,
thank you.
Yes. And then you have been listening to www.aboutsexpodcast.com. If you want to find me, you can also visit www.therapistinst.louis.com. You can also check out my books, Helping Couples Overcome Infidelity, or Premarital Counseling at Amazon. And then, of course, feel free to email your questions to aboutsexpodcast@gmail.com, and we may answer them online. I'm your host, Angela Skirtu. Stay kinky, St. Louis.